The 65th session of the Montana legislature is winding down, but there are pieces yet to be put into place before lawmakers can adjourn. I'm Jackie Yamanaka. Later in our show, Representative Mike Cuff will talk about legislative efforts to address aquatic invasives. First, Capital Connections contributor Chuck Johnson sat down today with Senate Majority Leader Fred Thomas to talk about the negotiations taking place with the governor to bring this session to a close.
It became news on Tuesday when you announced that you had met with Governor Bullock, a Democrat, and were talking about negotiating on some tax bills, as I understood it, to get some that he wanted passed and to get some you wanted, that you and Republicans wanted passed. Can you elaborate a little on that?
You bet. And as you get closer to the end of a session, you're always trying to figure out, okay, how do we get some of these things done? And for us, you know, we're committed to getting some good pieces of legislation passed that we think is right for Montana, that are going to help develop better paying jobs through tax policy, make the state a little more competitive, and get some things done here. And that's the way we see it. And of course, there's things that the governor and the Democrat Party that they see that they like as well, that we might not like, exactly like. And vice versa, let's call it. And so, you know, we've been sitting down and reviewing those lists and seeing if we can't come up with an agreement saying, okay, well, if you'll do this, we'll do that. And so that both parties can, as in the governor and the legislature, can come to terms on what would be a package of legislation that we can go forward and put into place.
Now, yesterday, you laid the groundwork for sort of freeing up a couple of Democratic bills, one to provide a tax credit to businesses that hire new apprenticeships and a larger tax credit if the apprentices are veterans. And then the other bill is a so-called earned income tax credit. Are there other Democratic bills we're going to see following in those footsteps today or tomorrow?
Well, and so we try to put those two bills in position to get them back to the House of Representatives, and then they could reject the amendments and then send those bills to a conference committee where we could do further work in there. And so we will have continued conversations with the governor, his staff, Democrats in the legislature, Republicans in the legislature, because whatever we come up with here, we have to come back to all the parties that be, the people with the votes, and say, okay, here's what we've got. Are you good with this or no? And so there are Democrat bills in there. There are Republican bills in there that, you know, like I said, that we think drive towards better economy, better paying jobs in the state, will help create those things. And so that's where we're at on that package right now.
We know at least two of the Democratic bills, and yesterday you were reluctant to tell us what Republican bills there were, except maybe list the sponsors. Any more info on that today?
Well, one of them that's a tremendous opportunity for the state, for a good example, is the one by Senator Blaisdell that is from Flathead. His legislation would set the state up in a better, more competitive position to attract what are called data centers to the state. And a data center would be like Facebook, Amazon, some big entity that they come in and they have a huge facility takes a lot of people to build and create and put in place. And they have, you know, it's just a great big server farm of equipment. And so our tax rate needs to be competitive on that piece of the pie, or we will not be competitive in getting those here.
So as we move on, we're at midweek today, will we see more of the bills that each side wants surfacing today, tomorrow, the next day?
Yeah, I expect to have a follow-up conversation with the governor today, and we'll get a better feel for what he has in mind and what he's willing to do or not do, et cetera. And we'll go from there. And then, you know, I know we had some questions about, you might want to go into this, it's up to you, but you know, I've had some questions. Well, how are all these interlinked with House Bill 2, the major funding bill, the infrastructure bills, and all that? And while this discussion and all with the governor and what we do there. We're not going to hold up other bills because of this, whether however it goes in general. But I think but everything in the legislature is connected to some large or small degree. And so the point that I would make, if you ask me about this, would be that our success in this area of coming to terms on this piece of this discussion bodes into, you know, how does the rest of this fall in place? And that's key. And so if we can't make a deal on kind of some of these easier things, and I hate to use that word deal, but if we can't come to terms on this, then it kind of bodes, if we cannot, it bodes ill for the rest of the negotiations. If this goes well and we can get some terms here that everybody can live with, then it kind of flows, it keeps the flow of getting everything else done. And so it'll tell us whether the governor is serious about the bonded infrastructure bill that two sessions ago he vetoed a bill that would have put money into infrastructure in Montana. Last session we failed to pass a bill that would have been bonding infrastructure. This session, that's still there, and of course the lift is heavy on the bonding because it takes a two-thirds majority of the legislature to pass bonding, to commit to bonding. We will fix the highway infrastructure program this session. We will pass a great deal of cash projects on infrastructure. So we won't leave this session without addressing infrastructure. We will have done that. But this bonded side, it's a tough lift to get two-thirds of the House of Representatives or the Senate to vote for a bond for bonding. And while we did that in the Senate, the House has been a tougher, higher bar to get passed. And so if we can have good negotiations with this piece that we're talking about on come to terms on this tax bills and all, that bodes well for us going to the House and say, we've got these things. Let's get these things done that will help get the infrastructure bill passed. But I think that's really more in the governor's lap as to whether he provides the final pieces of leadership to get this done or not. We'll find out if he's serious about infrastructure bonding or if it's just kind of one of those things that I want it, but if you don't do it, I'm going to blame you for not getting it done. And that's, you know, not the way to get this, you know, we're not into that. We'd like to accomplish infrastructure bonding and have a full piece of highway cash infrastructure and bonding infrastructure. We'd like to get that whole thing done. But I think it's up to the governor as to if we can get that done or not.
Well, as you know, though, the resistance has come in the House among 15, 20 Republicans who opposed bonding last time, and I suspect many of them will oppose it this time. The bonding bill by Senator Eric Moore for $98 million has been sitting in House Appropriations for quite a few days, and I don't know when they're going to act on it. But at this point, it's sort of stalled there, I think.
Yeah, and I think that the House, in a generality, is holding that bill to see, you know, where all this is going at the end of the session. I think the votes can be there to accomplish it, two-thirds, which gives you, you know, 67 votes in the House is what we need, of course. But I think it's incumbent now to see what the governor would like to do, because I think if he can play the right cards here and accomplish a set of things between now and whenever we pull that bill up or get done here, I think we can accomplish the bonded side of infrastructure. But I think it's really on his watch now to provide the leadership to get this done.
But I mean, in the House, on the House Democratic side, every one of those people have voted for infrastructure. The resistance has been on your party side in the House and a minority of your party in the House even.
Yeah, but you got to remember that it's a Republican legislature, and so he has to work with us. I mean, that's kind of what it's about. And so it's not enough to just say, well, he got the Democrats to vote for that bill. he needs to work with Republicans as well to put all this together and not just say, well, it's you know, my way or the highway. And I'm not saying he's saying that.
Yeah.
But if that's the way this comes across, then I don't think we get bonding for infrastructure. If he comes across and says, look, I'm going to work these things out with you. We are a Republican state in general. We have a Republican legislature. I need to do my part in this picture of accomplishing this. If he does that, I think we get infrastructure bonding. If he doesn't do that, I don't think we do, and I think then it's really his deal.
Concerning the tax bills, we don't know yet what the impact of those is on the general fund balance, and the last status sheet I saw was, I think, last Wednesday or Thursday, and we had an ending fund general fund balance of about $162 million, as I recall. As you know, the governor has insisted on $300 million. Senate Republicans have said $200 ought to be good enough as long as Senator Jones's budget stabilization bill passes, which simplistic explanation sort of provides levers for the governor to pull by making cuts or draining certain funds if we hit a recession and the revenues drop. But do you have an upper limit on how much these revenue bills might cost the general fund and increase the difficulty of getting a budget through the governor?
Well, there are a few bills that we would say are Democrat bills in this package that do cost some money because they're like income tax credits, et cetera. So you know, those are all on the table. Some of the bills that we have and key bills that are Republican bills are opportunity side, to where they're not going to cost a direct hit to the general fund because we reduce, like in this key bill I mentioned, they reduce the tax rate on something we're earning nothing now on. So if that goes into place, we would actually earn more money for revenue if something happens here, not lose any. So that's there. Yesterday, one of the bills that we amended on the floor was the property tax bill. And we stripped out the mitigation cost, and that was $32 million. So now that comes off the balance sheet, and you add $32 million back to that ending fund balance that we were talking about. And so it gets you close to that, you know, that $200 million mark come, you know, July 1 of 2019 is the date that that number is anticipated to come into there, to that level. So that does that. And so then you go back to this $200 versus $300 million level of ending fund balance, setting up the rainy day fund that Senator Jones has worked so hard on, the Budget Stabilization Act. I think they're now negotiating and working on what happens if revenue falls off a little bit, you know, what then happens, and trying to kind of pre-plan instead of just having this there. And they're working on those triggers and such, and they could tell you more about that in detail. But that's ongoing discussions right now as well.
Last question, Senator Thomas. I know a lot of Montanans are wondering, what is the ending? When will this legislature end? What are you telling people that ask you?
Well, you know, officially I say we'll be done by the 90th day, which is, you know, avoiding the question. I think we could be done within a week, and that would be it's possible even this week, but it kind of depends on these negotiations that we're having. If we're fruitful in them, then it takes a little more time to put things together. If we don't have any luck with them, then it's kind of easy to say, okay, that's done, pull a plug on a lot of things and get out of town. So we'll see. We're ahead of schedule right now in every way that we can be. So that's good. Time is ticking on us, too. We're ready to go home, believe me.
Well, very good. We've been speaking with Senate Majority Leader Fred Thomas, a Republican from Stevensville. Thank you very much, Senator.
My pleasure. Thank you, Chuck.
We want to welcome Representative Mike Cuff. Thank you so much for coming and joining us and talking with us about the issue of aquatic invasive species.
Good to be here, Jackie. I appreciate the chance to talk about this fine issue.
Let's just start with the basics so our listeners can understand basically what we're talking about?
Well, the big target at the present time is mussels, quagga and zebra mussels. They're a little shell, not much bigger than your thumbnail or your fingernail. And they came out of the Black Sea or the Caspian Sea. After the Iron Curtain came down, they came into the Great Lakes, migrated down into the reservoirs on the Colorado River, and quickly have reached on around the United States. And they're now in Montana, the first of the four Pacific Northwest states, Montana, Idaho, Oregon, Washington, and now we believe we have them in Montana.
So the governor late last year declared a state of emergency because of Tiber Reservoir, and they believe they may be in Canyon Ferry Reservoir. The state of Montana has been preparing for, is it correct to say, the eventuality that these mussels could arrive in the state?
Yes, we were making efforts to keep them out through some perimeter defense, but this is a much, much more better, thorough kind of a program that we're launching at the present time. And as you said, the governor declared a full-blown emergency. He gathered an incident command team. They took into this thing just like it was a major, major forest fire or any other kind of a disaster developing, which in actuality this is. This is a slow-moving catastrophe that could turn into a huge, huge problem over a couple of years.
Yeah, I think, let's discuss that if we can, Representative, because people may wonder, well, what damage can these mussels do?
Well, what these mussels do, probably one of the real number one things. Let's just say that as an area becomes contaminated, and typically they grow very quickly. If they're going to take hold in a body of water, and it appears that the bodies of water in this area have the proper pH level that will cause these little critters to thrive. And what happens is each shell will lay someplace between 500,000 and a million eggs per year. And the eggs create something called veligers. It's a larvae stage of the development, tiny, tiny microscopic things that float around in the water, at some time settle to the bottom and grow into shells. And then these shells cluster, and they keep fastening on top of each other. If you have a pipe and you put it into a contaminated lake, I have one at home, in less than a year, a 4-inch pipe, or 3-inch pipe, similar to irrigation, is completely closed up. It's completely surrounded by these mussels. And in fact, coming out of Tiber Reservoir, we have a water outlet to feed one of the major regional water systems. So number one, they clog things up. Number two, they'll cover the bottom. I've had people tell me that they took their children back to Michigan to teach them where to swim in the same place they did, and they have to wear tennis shoes to walk in the water now. So those two things, they filter out the low level of plankton and the root of the food chain. So essentially, they eventually starve out the fishery population in a lake. And so it's a huge, devastating kind of a problem in a lot of levels, Jackie.
And it was just this past weekend that Fish, Wildlife, and Parks began more intense monitoring, particularly of watercraft of all types.
That's true. Primarily the Fish, Wildlife, Park stations were coming into operation this past week. A few stations were already in operation, such as the one over at Clearwater Junction between Missoula and Great Falls, about halfway. And that one has been in operation for a little while. That one, closely coordinated with Fish, Wildlife, Parks, actually operated by Missoula County, formerly operated by Flathead Basin Commission. So, but scattered around the states. Last year we had 17 boat check stations. This year we'll have at least 34 FWP stations. plus a number of others that are like the Missoula County station at Clearwater Junction, could be up close to 50 stations even.
You've been working on this issue, and you have two active bills that are working their way through the process that will deal with funding, because having these check stations and the monitoring is going to cost money.
Yes. It's going to cost quite a bit of money. And the primary appropriation bill is House Bill 2 and a couple of the related bills. The primary revenue bill, which is how you get the money to pay the appropriations, is Senate Bill 363, carried by Senator Chaz Vincent. And that was a big, challenging piece of work for him to take on. And it the estimated cost is a minimum of $11.5 million, maybe $13 million. And basically, we put that together with fishing license increases, particularly on out-of-state fishing licenses, and an assessment of fees on hydro-generating facilities and distribution facilities, such as the co-ops around much of the state.
And why did you pick the hydro? Can you talk about that first?
Sure.
And won't they just pass that through to customers?
Yes, I expect it will. And really, I wish that we had enough money in the general fund, that we just went to the general fund. The original legislation that I passed back in 2013, we funded the boat check stations out of the general fund, because the costs that are going to come if we get a bad infestation, the costs impact everybody, literally everybody. The general fund is paid for by just about everybody. Now, you have to walk back to where it was when we walked in the door of this Capitol building 4 months ago, back the 1st of January, and there was no money in the general fund. There was no money in the general fund. In fact, we were short, and those of us on Appropriations Committee spent hours and hours, most of this session, working in conjunction with the governor's office, various agencies, trying to cover the basic needs of the state and at the same time rebuild that general fund up to the point that it could handle the cash flow situations that we get in. And so you even heard some of that discussion on the floor of the House again today. Now, so there was no general fund money to be able to pull from. So then how do you equitably distribute it across the state? Senator Vincent came up with a lot of ideas in conjunction with the Incident Command Team and in conjunction with DNRC and the folks at Fish Wildlife Parks. A number of ideas were laid out. There were issues that we were over. Some folks were getting hit three or four times to help pay for it. So basically what we wound up with is coming down to say, okay, we'll do the hydro-generating facilities based on the nameplate estimated number of kilowatt hours that they produce. We would go to fishing licenses, primarily out-of-state fishing licenses, take the big hit, and that we could come up with enough money to cover the whole state. Now, along the way, we got some very innovative ideas, like a bicycle tax and a bottle cap tax, but as it worked out, we settled on fishing licenses and hydropower.
Now, is this going to be enough for the biennium, or do you see this in theory perpetuity? Is this issue going to blossom so much, as these can be fast-growing critters?
There is a big chance. Well, basically, most of us anticipate 2 years from now, we've got to go through this dance all over again. However, 2 years from now, we're going to have a much better idea of what do we really have. Right now, there's strong belief that we have them in Tiber Reservoir. There is some suspicion that they're probably in Canyon Ferry. Now, maybe that's the only places, or maybe they don't take hold. Maybe somehow over the winter, they don't actually show up. What we're going to be doing as soon as the weather warms enough, right now, we're doing continuing preventive contain and control. and we're checking all the boats coming into the state before they launch. We're checking all of the boats coming, or we're decontaminating all of the boats coming out of Tiber and or Canyon Ferry, trying to prevent the spread in all parts of the state with a maybe a little extra effort to keep them from crossing over the Continental Divide into the Columbia River drainage. Now, it's possible they've already spread into other bodies. We don't know. So 2 years from now, there will be many, many, many water samplings taken, many, many, many boats inspected and decontaminated. 2 years from now, we'll have a much better idea of what our needs actually are as far as dollars, what's effective, what isn't. We are trying to go after it and keep the problem limited to as few places as we can. And I think much of the program was developed by the incident command team. And I have to compliment the governor for on November 30th, he realized that, hey, this is a really big deal, and created this incident command team that went after straightening, it went after everything, economic impacts, the entire life cycle of the shells and where they come from and how they thrive and so many things. And they developed a great deal of the framework, which I carried in another bill, House Bill 645, and or 622, I think. Anyway,
yep, 622.
House Bill 622
for the council
was was the framework, the policy. It has the what used to be the Montana Invasive Species Advisory Council. It also has a new council called the Upper Columbia River Drainage Committee. All of those things, one of the very neat things of it, we have tied everything back to EQC, the Environmental Quality Council. EQC is a very powerful legislative body that operates through the interim throughout the year, and they have rule. They will review rulemaking, and so that's a great, I think, a really strong piece of this to make sure that things didn't slip away.
And just really quickly, Representative Cuff, I want you to address what individual boaters and anglers and people who enjoy Montana's waters can do also to help prevent the spread.
Number one, stop in at the boat check stations. Give them your courtesy. They've got a real important job to do. Number two, clean, drain, dry. Now, what the heck does clean, drain, dry mean? Well, it means wipe out your boat. Any standing water. Remember, these tiny little microscopic veligers might be in a corner of a boat, let's say, that comes out of a contaminated area. Maybe somebody was in the water, they climbed out, and it drips off a swimming suit or a pair of waders or whatever. If you have a plug, many of the boats, especially wake boats,
they take
water, ballast water inside to allow them to sit low. When they come out, that needs to be drained out. And if there's a place that bait is contained in a bucket of water or a well in the boat, those need to be dried and cleaned. And pay attention to other boaters and spread the information that these are bad, bad things to get spread around our state.
Well, with that, I want to thank you so much, Representative Mike Cuff, for coming in and talking about aquatic invasives. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jackie.
You've been listening to Capital Connections. Thank you for joining us. Our theme music is courtesy of the Alex Nauman Trio. You can find this and past programs on our website, ypradio.org. Capital Connections is a production of YPR News.